what I love about these high school girls.
I get older,
they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Hello, and welcome to Love This Movie, Hate This Film with Colleen Hale-Hodson
and Zelina Alvey.
We're just a couple of friends who have each seen a lot of movies, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we agree on which ones are good and which ones are just crap.
Yeah, and from these arguments we thought, hey, maybe other people would like to listen to us bicker, and thus Love This Movie, Hate This Film was born. And this month's podcast is the Damn the Man edition, as we'll be talking about the iconic coming-of-age movies Empire Records and Dazed and Confused.
Empire Records is a 1995 film which takes place over one day at a record store somewhere in Middle America. It stars Liv Tyler, Rory Cochrane, Renee Zellweger, the girl from The Craft, and it's directed by a fellow Canuck, Alan Moyle.
Yeah. And Dazed and Confused was made just 2 years earlier than Empire Records in 93, and it's directed by Richard Linklater. In this movie, it's the last day of school for a group of high school kids in 1976. And this cast is huge and includes everyone from Ben Affleck to Parker Posey and Matthew McConaughey, and go figure, Rory Cochrane as marijuana enthusiast Ron Slater, who also plays Lucas in Empire Records.
And apparently Renee Zellweger also makes a bit of an appearance, even though it's uncredited.
Yeah, this is one of the random bitchy senior girls, yes. Right, in Empire Records. Well, so let's start talking about what similarities these two movies have. First of all, they are both part of the one crazy day teen youth culture rebellion structure lineage.
Yes. I believe that's its official name.
I think so, yes.
One crazy day. Both of them take place in one day. They both revolve around young people. I think some of the people in Empire Records are supposed to be a bit older, in their 20s. Some of them. 20. And then some of them are still high school students, sort of. They're all in that sort of midway point where they haven't actually left being young.
Yes, hence the coming-of-age spin.
Yes.
For the both movies. And I think, in my opinion, from what I know, based on the movies I've seen, I think that all started with, you know, the George Lucas 73 movie, American Graffiti.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a bunch of kids, the youth culture, there's a whole day where they're thinking about going up to college, and I think it all started there. Yeah. Starring Richard Dreyfuss and Ron Howard, by the way.
That's right.
About life in the 60s and youth culture, yep. And today, now we have movies like Superbad, starring Michael Cera, and Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist,
and these,
starring Michael Cera.
Empire Records and Dazed and Confused definitely fit into that mold of that type of genre movie, that type of teenage coming-of-age film where it's specifically done over one day and you're supposed to sort of learn something by the end of it. And I think Empire Records has more of that, more of like a meaning forced, I wouldn't say forced, but, you know, more of a meaning that you're supposed to get out of the end of it.
Everyone actually reaches their dreams, decides they're not going to be held back anymore, and they're going to go for their dreams and live their lives.
Damn the man.
Well, yeah, that both movies, Damn the Man.
Who hold them down and whatnot. Yeah.
Pretty much.
But Dazed and Confused is a little bit less like that, and a little more like
kind of random ramblings, interesting dialogue, just kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
Driving around, being cool.
Misfits.
Yes.
Being misses, breaking those mailboxes, suburban mailboxes, and, like, throwing bowling balls through car windows.
Yeah, so definitely Dazed Confused, kind of more just random shit happening.
Yeah.
But in Empire Records, there's an actual story where the characters work at this record store, and apparently it's going to get turned into this corporate, one of the chain of music stores called Music Town, and they got to stop it from happening. Meanwhile, all the other crises are happening at the same time, and
none of that matters because it's Rex Manning Day.
Oh, we mustn't dwell. No, not today. We can't. Not on Rex Manning Day.
Well, that was Mark, the character Mark, played by Ethan Embry, in Empire Records, talking about Rex Manning Day, which is Rex Manning is this sort of super cheese ball, like...
very tan.
Very, very orange. pop singer who is sort of very past his prime and, you know, he's not really popular anymore. He's only popular with housewives sort of thing. And he comes into the store and he's doing a signing and he's sort of this huge blowhard tight pants.
So in addition to all the subplots with all the drama with all the other characters, it's also Rex Manning Day, and we have this.
None of the characters are particularly fond of Rex Manning or his music, except for Corey, who, as part of the plot, you know, it's sort of swooning for him, wants to lose her virginity to him. You know,
we've all been there.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Well, all right. Well. I want to bring up a quote now by Roger Ebert, who was talking about Dazed and Confused when it came out, and he called it art crossed with anthropology, which I think it describes Dazed and Confused pretty well, and any kind of movie that tries to capture a generation, the voice of youth. Definitely for both movies, it's all about being, you know, damn the man.
Damn the man. That's yes. Right. That's a huge part of being young, you know, is that you want to rebel against authority and people who don't remember what it's like to be young and to sort of be confused, I think.
And you definitely still have lots of youthful idealism and you think, I will just stick to my ideals and everything will be all right. I sound kind of bitter, but good for them.
Well, I'm thinking at the end, because at the end of Dazed and Confused, they're, you know, it's like... I'm not going to sign your form. And
well, the football coach wants him to sign a form saying he's not going to take any drugs he's on the team, and he doesn't want to do that. Maybe someone should explain to him the actual effects of taking drugs.
Yeah, well, it was the 70s. It was a different time, okay?
Fine. Well, in both movies, there's definitely that sense of the rebelling against something in Empire Records. Mm-hmm. They don't want their independent music store turned into part of a long chain of music towns and...
But and as far as anthropology goes, Dazed and Confused, yes, it is a little bit more naturalistic. There's not, like we said, there's not much of a plot going on. There's no real through line. It's just sort of a big party, and they drive around, and they drink, and they get into...
Well, I think it's how people really remember their youth. Yeah. It's just random shit happening, driving around in your car, hanging out, maybe drinking a little, and that's exactly what it is. So I think both movies hold up in... But being great teen movies?
But, well, I was going to say that Empire Records isn't exactly that naturalistic. It's got the plot, and it's got these characters, and they're very clearly sort of defined. It seems more like a movie that's been set up to be a movie. You know and understand that it's a film while you're watching it, whereas Dazed and Confused is almost sort of that documentary style. But I think perhaps if they... had realized that there was a documentary style that they could do it in, I think it would have been done that way.
Maybe.
Sort of like Kids, you know, if you've seen the movie Kids before. Only, thankfully, not quite as dark and horrible. But yes, because that's sort of done in the documentary style, and that's more recent. And but Dazed and Confused is sort of more innocent, I guess.
Well, I think the main difference between the two, not the main differences, but Empire Records is just a movie about some kids in a music store. Mm-hmm. It's set in the 90s, and it was filmed in the 90s. They're not trying to capture the 90s generation, necessarily. Meanwhile, in Dazed and Confused, I mean, this was made in the 90s, looking back at youth in the 70s, so it was kind of a little more anthropological in that way. And there's a certain sense of nostalgia and how people making the film remembered the 70s and their youth.
And those awesome cars. Really awesome.
Lots of awesome cars and driving around.
That's right. Well, what I wanted to mention is that while I was watching Dazed and Confused, I thought about this. This happens often about films that are made, like, now, about, like, the 50s or whatever. It's always seems like it's somebody writing about, you know, their high school experience. But it's only what they remember, you know, what they think happened. They're writing about how cool they thought they were back in high school, not how cool they actually were.
Or maybe how cool they thought the cool people were, even though they weren't cool.
Yeah, they seemed really awesome. But in reality, maybe they're not quite so awesome. I thought that might have been a bit of a flaw in Dazed and Confused, because they were all sort of... I thought not realistic in that sense, like, because these kids were not... particularly like the violence and stuff, which we'll get into a little bit later, but that was sort of portrayed as, you know, it just happens, you know, rite of passage, you gotta
where the characters, the senior class,
yeah,
tries to haze the younger class, the male ones in particular, mm-hmm. by paddling them,
yeah,
with wooden boards.
You just gotta be smacked in the ass, I guess. That's
that's
so normal. It happens to everybody. Gosh, didn't it happen in your town?
Well, when I joined the Stonecutters, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
what?
Nothing.
Right? No? Yeah. Yes, but then Dazed and Confused also, it just sort of portrayed that as normal and it was all right. And, it, you know, if you just took your licks and smiled about it and didn't complain, then you're cool and you're accepted into the cool club. And I thought, well, you know, that's not quite that simple, and it's not that cool to be in the cool club, really.
Well, in Dazed and Confused, there are two characters who are both freshmen who are coming to school new, one guy, one girl, mm-hmm. and it's like their experiences being hazed and getting invited to a cool party by older kids and drinking and making out with people, and it's like a rite of passage. It's like they're getting brought into this this culture mm-hmm. of high school, and it's all really positive. You're kind of supposed to be, like, happy for them, yeah.
That's what I mean. I mean, you're supposed to feel happy for them, but I'm thinking...
They're getting slapped around and degraded.
And abused, yeah. And they're getting into a culture that maybe it doesn't suit them particularly well. I mean, maybe. There's no way to know because you can't see beyond this one day, but I mean...
Well, I mean, these young kids, they don't know who they are yet. No. They're going to find out later, I guess. But at the moment, they're really excited to be included with the older kids and buy beer and stuff.
The cool kids.
Yeah. That's
right. It's all fun until somebody falls off the moon tower.
Don't give it away. Spoiler alert. That doesn't actually happen.
Spoiler. Okay, so, but that's, we're getting into a bit of a characterization.
Mm-hmm. As teen movies, doing their justice, do you think mm-hmm. both of them were great teen movies? We call them iconic, yes. But...
I believe that Wikipedia tells me that Dazed and Confused was very well received. Like you were talking about that Roger Ebert quote about Dazed and Confused. Yes. How it's art crossed with anthropology. I think that was generally the view of Dazed and Confused and how that's viewed. Empire Records, on the other hand, was not received very well. In particular, even Roger Ebert said something. It was like, I believe the quote was that he was, Empire Records was a lost cause.
Yes. Apparently not.
But it wasn't particularly popular when it first came out, but it grew sort of a cult status. I think for me, because it was played on television a lot, I got to see it. And that's how I connected with it when I was younger.
Maybe it's us looking back at the 90s with nostalgia.
While I was in the 90s, I believe, is when I watched it. So I was already there. But it was just Empire Records for me. I think we should point out that I'm for Empire Records. I guess you're sort of for Dazed and Confused.
Well, we both really like these movies, but yeah. I personally like Dazed and Confused a little bit more.
And I liked Empire Records a little bit more.
Yes. Well, okay, I liked Dazed and Confused particularly because of the dialogue.
Right.
I think there was a lot of really great dialogue, especially when Parker Posey, one of the bitchy girls, is pushing around some of the younger kids, and someone looks at her the wrong way, and she goes, "Wipe that face off your head." I mean, and you almost don't even hear the line. I mean, that's just...
But it's...
All those little snippets make the movie really great for me, and really speak to who the characters are. And
I think generally the acting wasn't quite as... It wasn't quite as good as the Empire Records. I think for the most... there are some really good lines and stuff in Dazed and Confused. I wouldn't say that it's the best dialogue I've heard, but there were a lot of funny lines, like that one particularly that was funny, and of course the Matthew McConaughey one, which you heard earlier in the podcast, a pretty funny line. But Empire Records, I have to say, I'm a music fan. So that's what I connect with. That's why I like that movie better than Dazed and Confused. Because I don't really feel it, like I said, I don't really feel the connection with that sort of popular crowd getting drunk and high and sort of hanging out sort of thing. I didn't connect to that when I was in high school. What I did connect to was being sort of weird, I guess a lot of people didn't like her character, Liv Tyler, I think.
Her character, Corey?
Corey, yeah, Corey's character, yeah.
She's a little weepy. I mean, she's really, really naive.
I know, but I totally related to her a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that say about you?
No! Because, well, you know, because she was sort of the straight A going to Harvard, sort of had her world together. Not that I ever did speed, spoiler alert. I don't quite relate to that, but just that sort of ideal of trying to have your life together and, like, I don't know, giving yourself naively to this big star who you think is something who really isn't, who's kind of not what you're thinking of.
All stars, Rex Manning.
Rex Manning. Ooh, so dreamy.
but I think that's what Empire Records tries to do. It gives you all these different characters, all the rather different kinds of crisis, going through something different. One girl, you know, uses sex to make herself feel good about herself. One guy wants to go to art school, but he's too scared to go. And one girl has this really tragic past, and she tries to commit suicide the night before. But don't you think that's where it kind of fails? It tries to push too many of these extreme situations in one day, having to all these characters and all intersex in one day.
No. Okay. Well, I do, like, I think it's definitely flawed on some levels, yes. But I liked the characterization. I really liked the way they did it because they didn't. Yes, all these people had a lot of shit going on in their lives, but that's actually pretty accurate with reality. I mean, people have a lot of shit going on. It doesn't always come out together at one day. I think
that's
a bit weird.
That's the thing. I'm sure they all have problems.
Like for the setup of the film, that's how it had to be done. But what I really liked about Empire Records and their handling of the characters and the actors, the way they handled their characters, that you could tell that each of them had a past, you know. For example, Robin Tunney's character, Deb, you know, the one who she comes into the store when she first shows up in the movie and she, like, shaves her head and you don't really get into all of their backstories until a little bit closer to the end of the film. But, like, they each have these little backstories. Like, Deb, you know, you can tell that some stuff happened in her life, like her mother is missing and her boyfriend. We don't really know what happened. There's just hints of it, and then little bits. They don't tell you the whole thing. They don't tell you the whole story. I think it would have been worse had they actually gone in depth into each of their characters, you know, problems in life. But they didn't, and they just sort of hinted at it, and they let it subtly come through, you know, through their portrayals, and they didn't, you know, they didn't overpower me with it, really.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I like that they didn't. She didn't come into the movie saying, I tried to commit suicide last night or something. They ease you into everything. They show, they don't tell. Mm-hmm. I really like all that. And that everyone seems to have a backstory that comes out
and it's not
slowly and naturally throughout the movie.
It's in their characters, too. Like, Lucas, you can tell that he sort of went through some sort of transformation. We should say that at the beginning of the film, all the action is started off with him sort of... He was supposed to be closing the store, and then he takes the closing money because he sees that there's this contract in his boss Joe's desk drawer saying that they're gonna be bought out by Music Town, and it's gonna turn into Music Town. And he was like, "This is awful. So I'm gonna help him out. I'm gonna grab all the cash, $9,000, go over to Atlantic City, and win some more money so that I can help out the store." He's so earnest. I love it. And he goes through this sort of transformation because, of course, you know, he loses the money. All of it, and comes back, and there's no money, and then that's the main crisis of the film.
He almost had the money. I mean, he doubled his money at first. Let's note that. He doubled his money at first, and then he let it ride, and then lost everything. That'd be a lesson to you.
Yeah, never let it ride.
No.
Just take your money when you got it. But yeah, like, he's great because he's sort of zen-like, and it only comes out near the end that he's sort of had this rough past as well. I guess he's kind of an orphan. And Joe, the boss, the manager, sort of takes him in and really takes care of him. But it's like his character just settles in so nicely. And he's so spoon-worthy, too.
Yes, yes.
Because, like I'd have to say, when I was a teenager and I saw that movie, I was like, I need to date this guy. I need to find a Lucas, and I need to marry him, because he's awesome.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I thought the same thing about that character. Not the actor, the character.
The character, yeah.
Say Zen like Yoda things to me.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hot.
Very, very hot. And record store okay, employee. Yeah.
So all that I admit is really good about the characters, but didn't you kind of gag at a couple things? Especially at the end when Corey goes to meet AJ on the roof and she says,
I've always loved you.
Well, she pushes him down and says, you're so talented and you're so stupid. Why can't you just go to art school? And he says, I am going. I'm going to go to school in Boston so I can be with you.
Yeah. What was that? Hey, I didn't say it wasn't flawed. I said it was flawed. I think something like that was like a bit, that was over the top. There's, I think definitely stuff near the end of the movie that went over the top.
Yeah.
I think.
And on that note, an interesting bit of trivia is, there was originally 40 extra minutes on this movie that got edited out afterwards. A bunch of secondary characters, including Tobey Maguire, all got cut out. And a whole subplot where Rex Manning comes back at the end of the film and says, you know what, I have lost touch with my roots, and I'm going to go back to what I love. And he jams with a band on the top of the roof at the end of the movie. So there's a lot more that I guess could have made it even worse.
Yeah, but
they got cut out, so
whittled down. I like what they did with it, though. I think they whittled that stuff out. So, I wonder what Tobey Maguire was doing. What is carrot? I still want to know. But
maybe we'll find out one day.
Later.
Yes. Someday. Meanwhile, Days of Confused, I can't think of anything that I would want cut out of that movie. I think everything seems to fit so well, so nicely, and all the rambling dialogue that flows from one person to the next, and you get to see everyone hanging out, and
I guess so, sure. I guess it just doesn't, nothing seems vital to me, I guess, just because there's no plot.
Well, it's more about the characters than necessarily a story.
Yeah.
If they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about characters and flaws. Let's talk about the women in Dazed and Confused.
Okay, I concede this. I mean, in Empire Records, you get an even distribution of female characters and male characters having stories and problems and character development. Dazed and Confused, not so much. Yeah. You don't really get any female characters who really do anything. No. Nothing. They don't do anything. Nothing happens to them. They're very one-dimensional.
Yeah, they're only there sort of to play off the men.
I think they try. The one freshman girl who kind of gets initiated into the cool girls and goes out and kisses a boy at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to give her a story, but doesn't really work.
No. Like, particularly in contrast to the other freshman in the story, which is her character. His character.
The annoying Mitch. Yeah, I don't like him.
His name is Mitch. He's played by Wiley Wiggins. And her character is Sabrina Davis, and played by Kristen
Hinojosa.
Yeah. Very lovely. Great, good job. his character actually gets more story, and like real story, and he gets some sort of development out of it, and she really, I'm not sure what she's doing there.
The movie, she's just trying to fit in.
Yeah, just sort of
going
being
for the ride,
meek and mild, and drinking beer when people hand one to her. I didn't feel any real sort of character development from her, whereas like all of the men had some sort of story. Most of them are the main ones. Mitch, especially, he had some actual story development, whereas
it was mostly him and his mentor Randall Pink Floyd. His whole story is, I think, he's mainly the protagonist. We're gonna have protagonist in this movie, where he needs to rebel against his football coach and he's tutoring Mitch in how to be cool.
Yeah,
I think. But the women don't get a lot of good face time. But
even when Parker Posey goes up to Sabrina at the nearish the end, and she's like, she says air raid, and when the senior girls say air raid to the freshmen, they have to jump down and lie down on the floor, Sabrina was talking to Tony, I believe, played by Anthony Rapp, and that's the sort of the romance character or whatever, the one she kisses at the end of the film. And he's like, he says, no, don't do it. And she's sort of, it's not like her decision
Yeah, she kind of just chooses not to act.
Yeah, instead of actually
possibly doing out of fear.
Yeah, I think it was more out of fear, and had Hina been there to say like, no, you don't have to do this. You don't have to listen to Parker Posey. if he wasn't there, then she would have just done it, right? So it's not like there's any development there.
No, there's not much development. But I think even if all the characters don't necessarily have a lot of development, I think they do a good job of showing you a lot of different kinds of characters and who they are when they're just chilling and hanging out. Like, I know you said you didn't really relate to Dazed and Confused because they're all kind of the cool kids out drinking beer and stuff.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, those three characters, Tony, the redhead, the redhead girl with a big fro who I love, Jody, I think her name is, and Mike, played by Adam Goldberg, those three, the ones who, I don't know if they talk about Nietzsche, but they probably do in their spare time. And play poker every night. You relate to the characters in Empire Records. I related to these three characters talking about how
her name is Cynthia.
Cynthia.
Played by Marissa Ribisi, who's married to Beck.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the fro that won him over.
I probably think so. It's the red hair, just like Matthew McConaughey likes. I like the red hair.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Well, yes, those three characters are definitely the ones that I related to the most because, you know, they went to the party and they're being so cerebral about everything. You know, they're overthinking everything. They're
actively trying to have real high school and visceral experiences. Who hasn't been there? I've been there.
Whereas everybody else is driving around drinking and talking about girls and, like, shooting the shit, talking about Aerosmith, you know, cool stuff. And these guys, these three people are just, they're just so funny. They have
some of the best lines, but at the beginning when Tony talks about having an Abraham Lincoln dream where he's having relations with a very beautiful woman with a head of Abraham Lincoln. I mean, where does that come from? That's just randomly hilarious.
Yeah, that one, I like that line too. Yeah, that was a good little addition.
Yes, and later on in the movie, Tony has a whole spiel in the car about what he wants to do with his life.
Oh, it's Mike.
Mike.
Mike's the one who has that, it would be Adam Goldberg.
Yes.
Recognized actor these days.
Yes.
So, why don't we listen to that whole spiel?
Because I mean, you have to listen to him do it.
Yeah, he says it best, yeah.
I got a confession to make.
What do you mean a confession?
Look, you know, for like last year or so, I've been talking about going to law school so I can be an ACLU lawyer and be in a position to help people who are getting fucked over and all that. Well, I was standing in line at the post office yesterday, you know, and I'm looking around, and everybody's looking really pathetic, you know what I mean? I mean, like, people are, like, a drool just sort of stable, and then, like, this guy's bending over, you can see the crack of it. It was all sorts of, like, wife beaters. I realized I just want to do it, you know what I mean? I mean, it sounds good and all, but I just have to confront the fact that I really don't like the people I've been talking about helping out. You know what I'm saying? I don't think I like people, period. I mean, you guys are okay. I'm just trying to be honest about being a misanthrope.
So you're not going to go to law school? What do you want to do then?
I want to dance.
So isn't that magnificent?
It's great to... I just want to dance. Me too. I just want to dance.
Yes, thinking you want to do these really high moral things.
And then you look around the post office and people are just disgusting. I've been there too.
So, yeah, so the little things like that, I think, are very revealing about the characters. And again, I mean, that makes the movie for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I'd agree that that's sort of a saving grace. Like I said, I think both films are flawed.
In different ways.
In different ways, yes. They're different films.
So watch them both.
Admit that they're both different. Yes. But I wanted to talk a bit about music, because if we can't talk about... a teen coming-of-age movie without talking about the music.
Absolutely.
Music played a huge part in both films.
Obviously more in Empire Records.
More so in Empire Records, yes. And in fact, that album for Empire Records is, you know, part of the reason why people love it so much. There's the Jim Blossoms, the Cranberries. There's lots of really great... little dialogues about music and about the characters, and it seems very natural. Particularly that cut scene at the end of Empire Records, it comes after the credits, and it's just the two characters, Mark and sort of Stoner friend, are talking about punk rock and like new wave punk and the differences between it. Let's just give that a little listen and see how they discuss things.
Henry Rollins.
Yeah, the guy with the tattoos all over.
I admit Henry Rollins is sort of a puss, man.
Yeah, he's a total puss.
But his lyrics suck.
You can't go down and put down the Misfits, man. They had like everything it took to be a great punk band. They had good bass lines and like strong guitar chords, even though there was only three.
But it didn't even compare to Primus, man. They were that old school stuff.
Primus, why
get into Primus, man?
Primus is the new stuff.
There's always, I mean, the
out with the old, in with the new kind.
Evolution's a bad thing, and Primus is what's gonna come around.
So that was great. That
sounds very, very natural. Very much like how you would talk about music with your friends.
Yeah, definitely.
Not me.
Not you, particularly. Someone else. But, like, they just... It seemed very natural. And, yeah, I think maybe that was an ad-libbed section of the film as well. Because the two guys just really seemed like they were into what they were talking about.
Yeah, and these people are really, to some degree, banded together because of their love for music.
Mm-hmm.
And... also related their characterization as misfits, right?
Right. As sort of, they're all sort of, none of them are really fit in to any sort of mold, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the exception of Corey, but I think, we've already shown that she still doesn't really fit in. She doesn't really understand where her place is in the world. Mm-hmm.
They're all kind of orphans in their different way, with their own different problems, and Joe, the manager, kind of takes them all and he's their surrogate father throughout the film.
And so,
and music bands them together, all of them.
Yeah, like whether they disagree or they, you know, they all seem, well, they all seem to sort of agree about Rex Manning, at least.
And most of them seem to hate Mark's taste in music, which is a little sad.
Poor guy.
He'll make it.
he'll make it one day, for sure.
And actually, I mean, the movie is so much about music. Actually, one of the characters who's... Burko, his name is Burko, the rocker guy, is actually a rock star.
A rock star.
He's a musician, named Coyote Shivers. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when they're playing Sugar High, that's actually his song, his band's song.
Yeah.
And more interesting trivia, Coyote Shivers dated Liv Tyler's mom while they were filming this.
Yeah, so that his co-star was his stepdaughter, kind of.
Kinda, yeah.
Kind of creepy.
Awkward. That's a very rock star thing to do, eh?
Yeah, that's really cool. I don't know. And also, Dazed and Confused, the end of the movie, they go off to get those Aerosmith tickets.
Yeah.
Liv Tyler, man. I don't...
Everything comes together.
It's all connected, people. Mm-hmm. It's great. it's just, the music plays a huge part in that, and Dazed and Confused, the actual title of the film, comes from a Led Zeppelin song, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Of course, they weren't actually allowed to use any Zeppelin songs in the movie,
because... Robert Plant, god damn him.
I know, but as an homage, they titled it after one of the lyrics, and still, I mean, the soundtrack is... amazing, really. I think I didn't listen to music in the 70s. I wasn't alive, but I assume it captures the spirit of the 70s and the music that made the decade, right?
Yeah.
But it's definitely more of a soundtrack, a background music to the film. Mm-hmm. Empire Records makes more of a difference. And you were saying something interesting about the independent music store, how it's kind of archaic now, looking back at Empire Records.
It's very, particularly, I find it really interesting that Empire Records is sort of about this... corporation, you know, big music store coming to take over this little independent store, and it's kind of funny now because that's so obsolete. Like, you look at the music world and they're gone, you know.
Just in case you're not aware, Music World used to be a chain of music stores in Canada.
And
in Canada and the US?
I think it was in the US. I'm gonna check our facts on that.
Well, it's obsolete now.
But like, they're gone, and HMV is not doing so hot either.
No.
So like, the only sort of music stores that are still sort of in existence are in existence because of loyalty, and that's the independent music stores. So it would be like Empire Records would still
ironically. Good thing they didn't turn into a music town. They would have been obsolete by now.
And then by like in 10 years later, they were going to be gone.
Empire Records 2, the closing sale.
Yeah, because nobody uses it. Nobody needs to go into record stores anymore and go into the booths and put the headphones on, because they have their computer, and they it's sort of sad in a way, but I like that Empire Records captures this sort of subculture, this sort of music inclined, where people actually went to their record store mm-hmm. to listen to music and to talk with the people who worked there about music, and they really cared about it. You know, you have the characters discussing, like, hey, you know, you should get this on vinyl. And they, I think with AJ was sort of making fun of Mark at one point, because Mark listens to CDs, and that's why he's lame, and that's why his music taste is lame. He listens to CDs, and you can't do that. You should listen to vinyl. And now it's still sort of the same thing, actually. Like, some things never change. If you're listening to vinyl, you know, you're cooler than people who listen to CDs.
And if you mess up a vinyl record, it just warps it and makes it even maybe cooler. It
makes it sound even cooler, yeah. Like, and people who listen to CDs are above people who listen on MP3s, and, like, cassette tapes are coming back now. And
no, they're not, are they?
They are, actually.
I just threw all mine out.
Ah, you should have kept them. You could have been cool. No, I just don't know.
Damn it. I have to find that Janet Jackson Design of a Decade cassette now. Get it back.
You should. Yeah.
Enhance my cool factor.
You should. Do that, please. Say no more. Money more.
All right.
Say no more.
I might cut you off there. I think it's time to sign off.
Hello, Rex Manning.
All right. Well, so next time, what are we going to be doing next time on our podcast?
We're going to be going over the Scream trilogy and seeing which one is the bad one.
Because in every trilogy, there's a bad one.
Yeah.
So we're going to figure out which one.
I have my idea.
And I have mine.
Oh, well, we'll see if they coincide.
It will get fiery, I'm sure, because you're, you know, wrong.
You're wrong. But that's the podcast for Love This Movie, Hate This Film. If you enjoyed it,
tune in next time.